Today's blog, January 19th, 2026. Self-inflicted damage, eugenics, and white replacement. I just presented at a New Hampshire high school and was inspired and energized by students' interactions with and questions about eugenics in the U.S. and Nazi Germany. It's always fun and disturbing to begin by raising the question, how did an elitist, anti-democratic, race-based, white supremacist, anti-Semitic ideology become popular and shape the norms and laws in the U.S. in the 1920s and 30s? Admittedly, I'm pretty satisfied with how I got that into one sentence, but more to the point, what happens if hate goes unchecked? What ethical questions are raised when we discover that American eugenics had a direct impact on Nazi racial hygiene, which escalated to mass murder? Why are eugenics language and ideas reemerging to justify hate of immigrants in our country? I'm not so smugly satisfied anymore. Hate tells us nothing about the target group. I'm always asked to talk about anti-Semitism, hate, and bigotry and why certain groups are targeted. I always begin by saying that we will learn nothing about a targeted group when talking about hate. Instead, we will learn about the variety of intersecting and individual motives, fears, and needs of the believer. Blaming the victim is an easy way to justify hate that becomes destructive and, importantly, self-destructing. Confederate states committed treason and caused the bloodletting of the Civil War for two reasons: rejecting the election of 1860 and preserving the institution of slavery. Each seceding state spelled that out clearly. And the end result? Devastation. It is no coincidence that Berlin in 1945 resembled Richmond, Virginia of 1865. Hate is empowering, but it destroys us. Eugenics was the movement to improve society by fixing its genes, a sort of animal husbandry for humans. Who should reproduce? Who is valuable? Who is a threat? And most importantly, who gets to decide that? Eugenics emerged out of rapid social changes brought about by the Industrial and French Revolutions, which would continue through the 19th century. Rapid urbanization brought poverty, disease, exploitation, crime, despair, but also great fortunes for some. Were there enough resources for all? Were traditional power bases and important people safe? A lot of wealthy, well-educated white guys didn't think so. Origins. With Darwin's Origins of the Species, people began to think of how the rules of nature applied to human life. More to the point, how did this new scientific thinking give a framework to justify maintaining privilege? British thinkers created the idea of positive eugenics, that the right sort of people, white, healthy, educated, most likely, and financially sound, should reproduce. And negative eugenics, that less valuable people, workers, the poor, infirmed, weak, should be eliminated. Adopting the idea of survival of the fittest gave a convenient natural argument, no longer tied to traditional moral constraints, that resources should be diverted from the worthless to the valuable. Eugenics contributed to the idea that all undesirable traits were inherited and not necessarily about choice. German Empire in Southwest Africa. In what is current-day Namibia, colonial German troops suppressed the Herero and Namaqua peoples at the turn of the 20th century. Dripping in nationalism and the need to define what it meant to be German, Germany had recently been unified through three wars ending in 1871, and racism, Germans set out to prove why their race was, quote-unquote, superior. German scientists conducted medical experiments in concentration camps, and there was even a killing camp, Shark Island. Intermarriage between natives and Germans was forbidden. If this sounds familiar, Hermann Göring's father was the governor of Southwest Africa. Nazis, who later dressed up in their brown colonial uniforms in units led by veterans of the colonial slaughter, seemed to need to affirm their racial superiority by playing dress-up. The U.S. While Britain and Germany had their eugenics thinkers, it remained a relatively small clique of elites. The U.S. showed how these ideas could become mainstream. There were a variety of groups, often with nothing in common, that accepted eugenics language, some with zeal and others out of convenience. Former Confederates could keep building the lost cause myth and gain power by playing the race card. Anti-Semitism was always a bedrock, as was anti-immigrant sentiment. Anti-immigrant hate. There's much to discuss, but I will focus here on post-Civil War America's embrace of hate of the immigrant. The Statue of Liberty and its lamp of hope went up in New York Harbor in 1886. Immigrants had been coming in, mostly from Europe, to seek opportunity and help replenish and rebuild America after the Civil War. However, by 1879, the U.S. barred Chinese and Asians from citizenship, and in 1882 passed the Chinese Exclusion Act. Targeting Chinese workers who built the Transcontinental Railway allowed former Confederates to find allies with fellow racists in California. Anti-Semitism and anti-immigrant. As Jews began to arrive in the 1880s, escaping the pogroms in Eastern Europe, Boston Brahmins created the Immigration Restriction League. Senator Lodge talked about the usefulness of racism and the League, finding allies with the KKK and elsewhere, saw a threat to the nation's race and blood. From foreigners, they saw as breeds or species, not individuals seeking safety. When President Trump talks about Somalis as, quote, filthy, dirty, disgusting, ridden with crime, end quote, he is echoing the language of the 1880s. Stephen Miller adds to the diarrhea of hate that frames people as inferior species. Quote, you are not just importing individuals, you are importing societies. What do we think is going to happen? End quote. Hate education and immigrants? Racists often attack education, a main vehicle for democratic dignity and progress. Eugenicists embraced anti-democratic ideals and embraced hate through scientific justifications. Of course, they ignored facts that got in the way. A 1917 U.S. Army IQ test administered to many immigrants joining the ranks was designed and twisted to reinforce racial prejudice. Indeed, the quote-unquote data collected from this survey would be the basis of one of the most important Nazi eugenics books. What they ignored was that blacks who had migrated north and had access to philanthropic-funded schools performed much better than poor whites from Mississippi, Arkansas, Kentucky, who did not have access to education. Inspiring Hitler. Maybe this wasn't about genes and species after all. American eugenicists wondered why they have, quote-unquote, no place to drive the Jews to, end quote, and remembered the good old days, quote, when they burned the witches, but it seems to be against the Moors to burn any considerable part of our population, end quote, today. They also argue that, quote, the laws of nature require the obliteration of the unfit, and human life is valuable only when it is of use to the community or race, end quote. Hitler was impressed by this and praised American, quote-unquote, Nordic pride in its politics, end quote, referencing immigration restriction laws in the U.S. The KKK, with its slogan of America First, and other anti-immigrant allies in Boston and elsewhere, passed the race-based 1924 quota immigration law. My turn. By the 1930s, America, due in large part to the leveling effect of the Great Depression, began to sour on eugenics. Were social position and prosperity really indicators of genetic superiority? Eugenics was more about prejudice than science. Funds dried up while researchers discovered that there were no scientific justifications for sterilizing the quote-unquote feeble-minded. As we started to let go, the Nazis grabbed it. By 1945, they had killed millions and destroyed themselves fighting their war of race and space. Thank you, Doris Bergen. The U.S. and its allies won World War II. Our strength was our diversity that offered new solutions and commitment to the cause of building a more just republic. Over 500,000 Hispanics served valiantly. The Tuskegee Airmen and the 761st Black Panthers continued valuable black service. Indigenous peoples were code talkers, and Japanese Americans, despite or because of their families being locked up in U.S. concentration camps, produced the most highly decorated combat unit in U.S. history, the 442nd Nisei. My good fortune was to work with Richie Boys, mostly expat Jewish German refugees, whose service provided about 67% of the battlefield intelligence that helped us beat the Nazis in Europe. Those who vilify immigrants and refugees for personal political gain, grown from fear and hate, betray all of us. It is in our self-interest to foster freedom and diversity. It is purposely self-destructive, although perhaps self-enriching, to extinguish the lamp beside the golden door of American freedom. Once while traveling in Israel, my driver passed a blackened, dying forest. I thought maybe a missile had fallen. Oh no, he reassured me. We were stupid. Over there, we planted one type of tree. A disease came and they all died. Look over there, and he pointed to a thriving forest full of a variety of trees. We get smarter, he said. Now when a disease comes, only a few die, and the forest is strong enough to thrive. To me, it is the perfect metaphor.